हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 50. In the Chandogya Upanishad, there's the following mantra. Aitad Atmyam Idam Sarvam. This mantra indicates without a doubt that the entire world is Brahman. The absolute truth has inconceivable energies, as confirmed in the Svetasvatara Upanishad. Parasya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shuyate Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 1365 purport. And the entire cosmic manifestation is evidence of this different energies of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is a fact, and therefore whatever is created by the Supreme Lord is also factual. Everything is true and complete, Purnam. But the original Purnam, the complete absolute truth, always remains the same. Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Ishopanishad Invocation. The absolute truth is so perfect that although innumerable energies emanate from him and manifest creations which appear to be different from him, he nevertheless maintains his personality. He never deteriorates under any circumstance. So it's not like other things that if I have, let's say, a pot of something, you know, some ingredients, and I take some out for cooking, now the pot's less. That's the point, is because Krishna is the source of the energies. No matter how much is taken to manifest something, he still remains the complete whole. See, that's what's different. We want to be able to use this mundane mechanical logic. But that's the whole point. That's why logic, or the secondary, is subservient to the primary, which is him. Because he's the source of it. Right? So, we can't take it that because there is the secondary manifestation, therefore, then the Lord has to be like that. We have to understand in the application of the logic that the cause being in the effect, that's the point, not the effect is there in the cause. You understand? You have to take it one way, not the other. Does that make sense? You know, it's like yogurt. Milk is there in yogurt, but yogurt's not there in milk. The potential is there, but it's not that milk becomes changed into yogurt by there being yogurt. You know, the principle still remains. So then what you have is that the Lord may, through his energies, transform you out of the material world, which is temporary in this, but that doesn't make him that way. Does that make sense? So the syllogism only goes one way.
When it says that the effect is present in the cause, it simply means that the cloth is present in the thread. That is what is Vedanta Sutra defining.
Yes.
And then when you say that, you know, the cause is present in the effect, it is just the other way around.
The cause is in the
which
effect.
Which is true.
Means the cause is, that means because the cause is there, that's why the effect. Because there's thread, therefore you have fabric that has thread in it.
Yeah.
But it's not that that particular kind of fabric defines the thread.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like if I take the thread and I make one kind of cloth out of it, that doesn't define the thread. Or if I use a double, you know, how you say, what's it called? Ply. A double ply. Or a four ply. Or an eight ply. That still doesn't. And I make fabric like that, it defines the fabric, but it doesn't define the thread. Does this make sense? So, in other words, their difficulty is that they're using the syllogism backwards. And because of that, then that's where their confusion comes. They see the material world as temporary, full of misery, full of ignorance, and so then if the cause is there and that in the effect, they're using it backwards, that therefore the temporary things must be there in the original cause. So they're using the logic backwards, just like where there's fire, there's smoke, you know. So that means, where there's smoke, there's fire. That works, but where there's fire, there's smoke. You can have fire with no smoke, but you can't have smoke with no fire. So that's what you have to understand is in logic, that if you're going to use something in a universal way, it has to work both ways. Otherwise, you have to use it just in the direction that it works. You can't use it backwards and then expect the same effect. So, because these schools, these other schools are using it back, trying to apply it backwards, they're saying, therefore, then the Supreme can't have a connection with the material world. Because they're thinking that that transformation will be there in the Supreme. But it's in the energies that the transformation is there.
Maharaj, can you see the definitions of Satkaryavad and Asatkaryavad? So Satkaryavad is our definition, which mentions that the effect is present in the cause. So
yes. We
take it both the ways, right? Is it correct?
Means we look at it, we can see there, but the point is what Prabhupada is pointing out here is the independent position of the Supreme Lord. So the qualities that are here aren't necessarily, they don't affect his person. That's why he says he is a person. Where were we? The absolute truth is so perfect that although innumerable energies emanate from him and manifest creations which appear to be different from him, he nevertheless maintains his personality. That's the point we're talking about. Is they're transforming. They appear to be different, but it doesn't affect his personality. Because it's from him that they are coming. Not that from them he is. Like that. So you just have to see what aspect is there. So because they can't use it that way. In other words, their ability in logic in this area is weak. Right? Because it's easy to say it goes both ways. But the problem is that when they try to use it both ways, they don't know how to use it. So then they use it in a wrong way, so therefore they come up with the thing that it doesn't go one way, it can't go the other. So it has to be both. They can't see that there's oneness and difference. That when you take the difference, you're looking at the difference. When you take the oneness, then you see the oneness. Does that make sense? You know, so you have to be able to tell where you're using which one. You know, it's like I have a truck and I have a sports car. Okay, I see the commonality that they're both vehicles, but I do understand the difference that if I want to move things from my house to the new house, I use the truck, not the sports car. Right? You know, unless I'm just taking the ashtray over or something. Right? You know, then that'll fit on the seat, you know, maybe one or two other things. You know, I could take a few magazines in the ashtray, that's there. But, you understand? So that's the problem here is that they're not catching it. The personality has inherently all these aspects, potency there because of the source of energies and the potency that the energies can transform. But it doesn't mean that he transforms. His transformation happens in his energies. But that the energies can have transformation, that's in him. Right? Because if he didn't have that ability of that aspect of transformation, though he doesn't transform, how does he interact with all the transformations of the energies? Right? Because the energies take on unlimited variety, how would he be able to interact unless that potential of unlimited variety is there in him? But as he doesn't change, as he, as the same personality, is interacting with all that variety. But we see is that the variety is different personalities.
Then is it a correct understanding that they take only the aspect of the energetic without the energies?
Yes, that's the whole point. But since we're not looking at is energetic, they don't even see it as energetic because energetic means there's energy. They just see there's the Supreme and then there's this Pradhan. How Pradhan gets there, they don't know. Just all the transformations come there. Right? Mm-hmm. So that gives rise to any variety of these philosophies. Mm-hmm. So some will accept that this transformation it actually exists, and then the Maya bodies, they say it doesn't exist. Right? It's an illusion. But still, the thing is if Brahman is everything, where does illusion come from? That means Brahman has to be part of... illusion has to be at something of Brahman. Now, if we're not accepting energies and energetic, then we have a problem, because that means does Brahman transform, which is against the point that it makes. It doesn't. But the energy of Brahman transforms. So if Brahman is the energetic, and then Brahman has energies, and those energies transform, but it's all in the impersonal state, then it all works. But even though that's in the impersonal state, how does the impersonal state come to exist unless there's the personal? Right? Impersonal? It means persons first. It's not personal. So we have to understand darkness means there's not light. So that's how it works. We have to catch that these subtleties are there. That's what we're trying to catch here. And if you can catch those subtleties there, then you can deal with so many subtleties within one's own practice in Krishna consciousness. Like, what's the difference between, okay, it says that, okay, I can engage my senses in the Lord's service. But the point is now, can you have to be able to tell the difference between what's engaging my senses and what's the Lord's service. Otherwise, how do you know if you're engaging your senses in the Lord's service? Because I see you can engage your senses, and there's the Lord's service. So I'm chanting Hare Krishna, that's the Lord's service, and I'm engaging my senses. You know, when I'm eating lunch, you know. So, you know, but the point is because of the lack of the logical syllogisms working here, that's the whole problem. Is that we're not seeing what's going on here. The technical point is that, yes, you're engaging, but that's one effort in consciousness, and then my chanting is another effort. Now, of course, from this, the chanting effort has much greater effect than my materialistic effort, as long as I'm sincerely trying to follow in that. And so then, therefore, then there'll be weeds there, but those will go away by that focus on the chanting and all that. And the other thing is just by habit you're doing these things, and so you're not putting much effort into them. Right? It means you go to eat, you just sit down, you cook what you like to eat, you eat it how you like to eat, you enjoy it how you normally do, but it's just a matter of course. Right? But when I start making philosophies how that's all right, and see, I can engage the senses and all that, and so therefore it's all right that I cook. Now at this point the emphasis is on you're enjoying the senses rather than engaging in Krishna service. And so at that point, now these weeds grow, they'll choke the creeper. Right? And then to be able to discern what's pure devotional service is that, well, if pure devotional service is there, that means my engagement of the senses has to be in connection with Krishna. Right? I have to be conscious of Krishna. Okay, I'm conscious of Krishna, I'm engaging my senses. Okay, that's the first stage. You're purified. Right? Like that. We see the demons, they're conscious of Krishna. They're purified. That's why they get liberation. Right? But now the next stage is that thinking of Krishna favorable. Is that concept of Krishna involved with this favorable? And so if it's favorable towards Krishna, then what makes my process of cooking and eating and all that favorable to Krishna? So Krishna likes things clean, he likes things this, the different things that you're doing, so therefore then I have to see that while I'm cooking, all the kitchen's clean, I'm clean, I'm wearing, you know, the clothes are clean, everything's clean, how I deal is clean, I don't sit there and, you know, taste things and put the spoon back in the pot like they, you know, like these 3-star chefs do and all that. Some of the good ones, then they put it on the side. They have a whole bunch of, they don't wash their hands, you know, No time. But, you know, the good ones, then they have a thing with spoons in it just for tasting and then putting right on the side. And then the other ones just said, "Wow, that's great! Yeah, you know, hey, you want some?" Yeah, yes. this thing I was up in what was that place? I think it was Jumsum. when you're going up to Muktinath.
Yeah,
and so then most of the people up there are Tibetans, and they've come down and they live there, and so they're Buddhists, and they, you know, and they, it's like, yeah, not necessarily the, it's cold up there, it's always cold, and so, you know, it's one of those where the girl says, I think I'm going to wash my hair, and then the boy says, didn't you do that last year? You know, so that kind of a thing. Yeah. So it just reminded me of that situation. Yes. So, yes.
Can we say that all the six philosophies, they go up to Brahman, and Paramatma in the heart, you know, is a person who is energetic without the energies, and Bhagwan is energy plus energetic. Can we define like this? Is it correct?
That means you can see Paramatma as the Lord with energies, but you're only seeing in that connection of that specific function. That's all. You're not seeing outside of that. You're not seeing his pastimes on that. You're just seeing that he's controlling the material energy and all those kind of things like that. But you're not seeing why he's doing it. That's Bhagavan. That's the personality. So now, these six schools, then they're situated, you could say, on the Brahman platform, but we see that with yoga, their acceptance of the Paramatma. But what's their goal? Right? It means they go back to Brahman. So that's why Prabhupada points out they're more unfortunate, because they know about Paramatma, they've taken a step forward, but then their ultimate is they go back. You know? So it's not ideal. So it's just they don't understand the energy. Means these ones are not accepting energy and energetic, right? That's where their problem comes in. And even if they do, it's limited how they do, where they apply it. You know, so that's the difficulty. So then with Paramatma, they may accept he's created it, he may control like this to some degree. But why that's there, then they're just taking it that he's doing all this, and if we follow the process properly and, you know, at the best scenario, please him, you know, then him being pleased, we get liberated. Right? So, but it's not about him as a person and that relationship with him as a person. So even we see when we go up into the monotheistic, the contemporary monotheistic ideas, because we mentioned here is that they'll say there's one Brahman, there's one Supreme. So on these levels that we're talking here, we're not talking, you know, demigod worship as such that they're supreme. Mm-hmm. They accept that there's a Supreme above all this. So even we take that out of the Vedic context, then there's the understand that it's a Supreme, they're a person, but at the same time, it's not a question of developing a relationship with them. You know, it's just that you have that faith, you follow the law. Mm-hmm. So they're actually only at best dealing with Paramatma aspect. They're not actually dealing with the Bhagavan. Though you can discuss Bhagavan and that's not a problem for them. It doesn't go against their faith. But at the same time, it's not something that they have developed. Does that make sense? They haven't developed that. So as soon as then you get into as a person, he has a form, he has this and that, that's beyond what they can handle. So actually the maximum they can handle is the localized, because it's localized to specific, you know, specific aspects. Okay. Does that make sense? You need water? Washing your hands. Yes.
No, it seems that in these six schools they don't accept the position of God as inconceivable.
They may be inconceivable, but they can't extend it beyond. That inconceivable applies into as a person and energies and varieties and all that. That they can't, because basically all of them, they're working with material logic, material intelligence here. So they can, I mean, it's not, we can, so they can appreciate the unlimited aspect, an unchanging aspect of the absolute truth. Mm-hmm. Now, one may say, "Is how do you understand that?" Because if you can only say, because that's how much Krishna will reveal. Mm-hmm. Because by revealing that, you only reveal the beginning stage of Brahman realization. Mm-hmm. So without that connection, that you couldn't perceive that, even though they're still working with material senses and intelligence. That Krishna allows that. Otherwise, how is there going to be a concept of something higher, something beyond? Mm-hmm. So just that glimpse. That's there, that much they can have with their just logic and trying to understand. So that way then they can appreciate there's something beyond. So then when the devotees or the Vaishnavas talk about what's beyond, there is a point where there is some discussion, there is some commonality. Well, if they can't perceive that at all, then it's just, there is no context. So there has to be that much, but it's still by Krishna's grace that they can understand that. Then we take that, and then now it's by association of devotees only you can go beyond that. Mm-hmm. That's the limit you can, just to know that it's, that is there. That's as much as you can get with material intelligence. Right? Then it's only by the grace of Vaishnavas that then you can get beyond that and understand what is Brahman, what is Paramatma, and what is Bhagavan. It's only when you understand the three with Bhagavan as the origin, then you can actually understand everything. There's no contradictions in anything to deal with. Seeming, yes, but there isn't actually. So that's why is when you're dealing, if there's a contradiction on the Brahman level, you take it up to the Paramatma. There's got to be, take it up to the Bhagavan. So if you have the Bhagavan aspect, then there is no contradictions. There are only seeming contradictions. Because you're dealing with his energies and their transformations. So the transformations, there's a variety. And that's where the contradiction appears to be. Right? Does that make sense? Because his expansion is his Surup Shakti. Which means the one Shakti that has all the unlimited elements within, right? Just like he is that supreme, the Shaktiman, with all that aspects of rasa and existence and knowledge within. So this is the natural counterpart, right? So now, as he expands his variety of the Vishnu forms that are him, then the energies transform to match that. So that's the difference. He is that all the way down. You know, there is some difference in personality, but we make less distinction there than we do in the energy transformation of the energies. Simply because Vishnu will never take on a material aspect. Only when it's Shiva, then we make more of a distinction. But because the Surup Shakti, one of the aspects is the external potency, then there we definitely make the distinctions. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
Is it that the proper use of all these parts of logic depends on prayojan?
Yes. Means what's your goal? And then we see a major difference that we're here is that what's your praman? What's your evidence? So in these six schools, the Vedas are the evidence. Though you see it's kind of loosely based on the Veda. They take the Veda, then they speculate on it, and their speculation becomes actually the authority. So they can give Vedic evidence. But it's actually the speculation. So it's not the chit potency and how it's come down in Parampara. Right? Because you can say is that, no, nowadays we follow Shankara, so it's Parampara, but where did Shankara get it? Therefore, that's the problem. Right? And so, and they don't actually appreciate that Shankara got it from Vishnu. So there is the Sampradaya, because he does have a Sampradaya. But, at the same time, as the purpose is to bewilder the atheists, those who are against the Vedic version. So you bewilder them in that they still follow their own philosophy, but now they accept the Vedas. Right? But to maintain their philosophy, they have to only accept those parts of the Vedas that you know, as it is, that work for them, and the parts that don't, then they interpolate them. Does that make sense? So that way it's closer, because now if they accept the Veda, now if you have a proper presentation from Vaishnavas, then they might see the actual position. So now they accept the Veda, they're following the culture. Now it's just their understanding, their prayojana changes. And then you see from Praman you have Pramaya, so how they'll define the Pramaya. So they accept the Veda as there, but how do they divine the soul or God or the material energy? Right? What is their process? What is their goal that they're going to get? These then are the Pramayas. That's where then you see what's wrong. So the first thing is, do they accept the Veda? They accept the Veda, then what's their Pramayas? Now, based on that, now we discuss. Right, so now you use the logical systems that are there, right? And then you have within the logical systems, then you have those aspects of the systems that are technically part of the system, in that if you have the system, you also have the negative aspects. So if you have proper, you have improper. But you have to know the improper, because people who don't know the proper, they use them. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like the farmer. He knows the day. That's when his work. But he also knows the night. You know, then things work. Like that. But there's those who only know the night. You know? Like the ones that come and eat everything in his field know the night. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, if he knows, then he can deal. So it's not that he needs to use it, but if he has to, then he does. You know what I'm saying? So if the animals are coming there at night, he can go out at night and scare them off. But otherwise, if they weren't coming, he wouldn't use them. So the same way as all those negative applications of the logic, you wouldn't use unless that's what the other person's functioning on. So if you can use them to establish the proper siddhanta, then that's good. So everything goes back to those. It means you have the shastras the first, then the praman, then you have the pramayas. Right? And so that's your root of the whole thing. So we see Lord Chaitanya gave the dasamula. It's the same. It's a Vedic principle. People say, oh, Lord Chaitanya created... No, this is just Vedic principle, because we have to understand, where do the Vedas come from? Where does all this knowledge... It comes from him. So he's just giving it in a very nice way that works for... appreciating the Braja Bhakti. So it's not technical enough, because you need technicalness, because technically the Braja Bhakti is more technical than all the other forms of bhakti. But at the same time, it's technical, but no one worries about the technical. So to get that combination without a chinta beta beta tattva, it's either technical or it's not. No, it's simultaneously technical and not technical, and we're good. So it's like, we don't care for the technical, but if you want to get technical, we can. You know, so if your understanding will be enhanced by using the technical explanation, we'll use it. But if you understand it by the simple, then we're not going to get into the technical to show our intellectual prowess. You understand? For others, then it's the technicalness is what attracts them. Okay. So he nevertheless maintains his personality. He never deteriorates under any circumstance. So no matter what's there, he never deteriorates. There is. He reciprocates with everyone according to how they deal with him. And there's no situation of them dealing with him that he doesn't have a reciprocation for, since he is the source of the Sarup Shakti. And everything's a transformation of the Sarup Shakti, so it can't be outside of the nature of the Sarup Shakti, which won't be outside of the nature of Krishna. Right? Krishna being the source. Okay? It is to be concluded that the entire cosmic manifestation is a transformation of the energy of the Supreme Lord. Not of the Supreme Lord or Absolute Truth Himself. Right? So the entire cosmos is a transformation of the energy, not of the Lord. Who always remains the same. The material world of the living entities are transformations of the energy of the Lord, the absolute truth of Brahman, who is the original source. In other words, the absolute truth, Brahman, is the original ingredient, and the other manifestations are transformations of this ingredient. This is also confirmed in the Taittiriya Upanishad 3.1. Yato va imani bhutani jayante. This entire cosmic manifestation is made possible by the absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead. In this verse, it is indicated that Brahman, the absolute truth, is the original cause, and that the living entities, jivas, and the cosmic manifestations are effects of this cause. The cause being a fact, the effects are also factual. Right? Because the point is it comes down this way. Right? And how the energy is acting, therefore Krishna can interact with that, because it's come from him. But it doesn't go the other way. Does that make sense? Like that. It's not that there's not a situation where we're not looking at it the other way, but in this, because we're dealing with the problem that they say there's faults in, you know, in compared to the absolute, there's faults in the transformations of the energy. And so if the Lord is this, then these faults then go on to him. So it doesn't work that way, the logic. Because the faults are, because the material energy, the temporariness is not a fault. Right, that the material energy is temporarily manifest is that technically a fault, because that's what it is, right? Is it a fault that horses can't fly? No, because that's the way they are. So the material energy is temporarily manifest, so it has that temporary aspect. It's not a fault because that's what it is. Right. Yes.
Now we can stretch it a little bit.
Yes, and let's see the stretch.
I say, in the material world, we are conditioned by the ego, trying to enjoy and control and enjoy. So that's what we are here, and that's not a fault.
Who's we?
Conditioned soul.
But what is conditioned?
False ego.
But is that the, but what is the soul actually made of? So does that include false ego?
No.
So then how can you say is that we're not at fault? We've taken on a false identity. If you have a false identity, there's a fault. Right? It means, yeah.
But if we use the example of the material nature, we have spiritual nature, which is the same one, but it functions in a different capacity. So we can say that the soul is like a spiritual nature, but the conditioned soul just functions in different capacities.
But then we're saying that there's two kinds of souls. So then you're taking up the Tattvavad philosophy.
Yes, same Sampradaya.
Same Sampradaya, yes. Yeah.
This is Jainism. We have different varieties of souls.
Yes. So that's the point, is yeah, very different. Yeah. So that then the point is that the souls are the same. It's just a matter of whether in their consciousness they take up the polluted consciousness, they accept the polluted consciousness. So they accept the coverings of upadis, but they're not the soul. The soul is not those things. So therefore, then the soul, that the body functions by the modes of nature, and the body does these things, the material energy does it. That's not actually the fault. The fault is we identify with it. So that's why you see these great personalities like Prahlad Maharaj and others. Then they're functioning in the material world, and they're not at fault. Just thinking is that as those mangoes get ripe, when they go by, they might start disappearing. They're the only ones tall enough to get them, right? Is that so? In other words, the soul is naturally in the liberated position, but they're accepting the conditioned position, which is wrong. It's not natural for the jiva. But, so, because the jiva is small, they have to function under the protection of a superior energy, meaning a greater energy. Right? So, this natural position is to function under the internal potency, not under the transformation of the internal potency as the external. Like that. So, we can say is no, but the soul is superior to the material energy, but that's superior in that they're conscious and material energy is not. But the point is the potency of the material energy is greater because it's a transformation of the internal. So by volume, 1/4 of unlimited and 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. Yeah, you know, you kind of got to see the difference there. You know. But the Sarup Shakti is, then the internal potency is 3/4 and the Sarup Shakti is 100%.
Okay. So... can we say that the cold is in the consciousness, not in the body?
No, that's my point, is that it's in the consciousness. That's why when people go, oh, we're not the body, so we don't have to follow these rules that govern the body, it's, what does that got to do with anything? I'm not this car, so I don't have to follow the rules that govern the car. I can drive anywhere I want, on the sidewalk, through the middle of the park. You know, like that, they do it in the movies, they always go through the park, right? You know, so, you know, why can't I do that? I'm not this car. So the point is the laws are for the car.
Right?
So the soul, the laws aren't for the soul. Right? Are the laws of Grihastha Ashram for the soul? No, they're for the body that are connected through the you know, the Vedic system of marriage. So then those laws apply. So someone's in that body, then you use it in that way. Does that make sense? You know, so that's how it works. So it's yeah. Let's say I have a hammer. Okay? And I'm going to drive a nail with that hammer, you know, into a piece of wood. And it's a, you know, a proper construction thing. Where will I hold the hammer?
Okay.
By the handle. But where on the handle? It's a big nail. I'm going to hold it all the way at the end. Right? So I get the maximum amount of what do you call it?
Leverage.
Hmm?
Leverage.
Leverage, yes. Now let's say I'm driving in a little dinky nail. Right? I'm going to hold it farther up so that the leverage is finer so I can have more control. So I'm not any of that, but it still is governed by the laws. You know? So that's it. If I take the big nail, you know, and a 6-inch nail, and I take the hammer and hold it right up near the top, and then it's not going to go anywhere. But, you know, probably after, you know, it might stick there, but after a while it might fall over, right? And if I take the other one and then hold it at the end, and you know, like that, you know, so yeah. So. Is that, yeah. So that's the whole point, is we're not any of this, but it doesn't mean that the laws of God that govern them aren't to be followed. Now, if we're a devotee of Krishna, and so therefore we're surrendered to Krishna, we would follow the laws, because as we saw, what's favorable to Krishna. So now, since there's so many laws of everything, and so many values that those laws are governing, then the point comes down to, is if it's favorable to Krishna as a person in devotion, then I only have to deal with certain volume of values, and therefore laws. But if I have attachments beyond, or values beyond what's necessary, then I still have to follow the laws for that. Just because I'm a devotee doesn't mean I still don't follow the laws. Is that making sense? Yeah.
Then regarding the laws, then whether one is in the material world or in the spiritual world, it is a basic principle that the laws have to be followed.
Yes, but the difference is that in the material world you have to follow the laws, but that's the point. But it comes down to, if we're accepting the supremacy of God, it's about following the laws. If it's about devotion to God, it's about these laws please Him. That's why I follow it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this change.
Yes.
So that makes the change between Vaikuntha and Braj.
Yes.
Right. But we have to understand that the laws come from Krishna's interaction with the Braj bosses.
Yes.
That gives the laws that they follow in Vaikuntha, and therefore the reflection of that in the material world.
Yeah.
Okay. In this verse is indicated that Brahman, the absolute truth, is the original cause, and the living entities, jivas, and the causing manifestation are effects of this cause. The cause being a fact, the effects are also factual. They are not illusion. Shankaracharya has inconsistently tried to prove that it is an illusion to accept the material world and the jivas as byproducts of the Supreme Lord. Because in his conception, the existence of the material world and the jivas is different and separate from that of the absolute truth. Right? Because they have this problem is that if we have faults, therefore if we take it back to the absolute, then the absolute will have those faults. Right? But it's. With this jugglery of understanding, right? See, that's where the jugglery is. Mayavad philosophers have propagated the shloka Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya, which declares that the absolute truth is fact, but the cosmic manifestation of the living entities are simply illusions, or that all of them are in fact the absolute truth and the material world and the living entities do not separately exist. So they take it one or the other. It's just that it's all illusion, so it's not there, or if you want to look at it as absolute truth, then everything is the absolute truth, so it actually is not, you know, we don't have to make that distinction. In other words, we make no distinction, we're all God, or it's a matter of it's all illusion. So now if it's all illusion, we don't exist, so how are we God? So then that's the problem, because if you say that, but then how does this even get there? Brahman, well, because it's all actually Brahman. It's an illusion that we think is an illusion. You know, it's not actually there. We're all just Brahman. So the point is they're by hook or by crook going to be God. You know, whether anyone agrees with it or not. And when you come up with a disagreement, they come up with a new angle on the philosophy to defeat your point. Until you come up with the next one.
So we have two different schools of Mayavad based on these two concepts.
You have so many schools of Mayavad because it just depends upon which one they
emphasize.
Yes, it's like I said, is that the first one thing is that is the Brahma Parinamabad. Yeah. Then because that doesn't work, then they get into Vivarta, right? And then from that they come. I don't even know what it's called, but it's one where there's one living entity, and then all this is a dream. But you know, then the problem is it gets weird. Mm-hmm. In other words. Shankara's was simple, but as you go, it gets more and more weird. You know, like Buddhism was very simple, but as it starts getting off into the Hinayana, Theravada, and you know all the other yans.
You can see the four schools. Because...
Yeah, so then it all becomes weird. You know,
yeah.
Like that. That makes sense. It is therefore to be concluded that Shankaracharya, in order to present the Supreme Lord, the living entities and the material nature as indivisible and ignorant, tries to cover the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He maintains that the material cosmic manifestation is mithya, or false, but this is a great blunder. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a fact, how can his creation be false? Right? Because he's real, how is it that what he creates is unreal? Especially since he's providing the energy. That's the thing is they don't get into. Even in ordinary dealings, one cannot think that the cause of manifestation to be false. Even in ordinary dealings, one has to keep that understanding. Therefore, Vaishnava philosophers say that the cosmic manifestation is not false, but temporary. Our attachment to it and the concepts that come up, our visions because of that, we'll say is illusion. But we don't say that those false concepts are not there. They actually exist. It means that you're in illusion is actually a fact. It's not an illusion that you're in illusion. No, it's a fact that you're in illusion. Right? But the point is that your perception of it, that's an illusion, because it's actually Krishna. It's actually meant to be used for Krishna. Right? It is separated from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but since it is wonderfully created by the energy of the Lord, to say that it is false is blasphemous. Right? So, Krishna is there. He creates the ingredients. He creates the primary of how they're used, their laws, how they function, and everything like that. Then Brahma manifests them. Then we start to deal with them. And when we deal with them, the mistakes we make, now we're trying to put those back on God. But actually, it's just like if you pull the humans out of the situation of nature, how does nature do? Doesn't have problem because there's no one there to manage it or things like that. There's no Bengali bureaucrats, so how does material energy function? You know, like that. Hmm? Yeah. So that's the whole point. It works very nicely. And those who are, you know, into nature is the basis of their values and philosophy, then they'll get into this a lot. You know, their idea is if you get rid of humans, then everything will work nicely. The only problem is if you get rid of humans, what's the point of the nature working nicely? Because it's all there so that human beings can elevate themselves to the transcendental position. No? Yeah. Yes, they're seeing the energies on their own. They're not seeing the person, why they're there and everything. They're just seeing the laws. So that some are able to observe and see laws. So intellectuals, you know, they generally by that, they see laws of practical people. They see there's a pattern and they follow it. But they don't know why it's there. Why is that like that? That's what they can't explain. Like that, right? So the point is it has to be seen that it's all coming from Krishna. And so to say that it's not, that's improper. Right? It's created by Him, that's why it's so wonderful. But the point is, what we do with it, that may not be wonderful. So we have to make a distinction there between the Lord, His energies, the nature of them, how they manifest, how they function, and then what we do with them. So we take what we do with them, and then we see all the problems and try to put that on God. You know, it's the same as the karmis, right? If it's all going wrong, it's God's fault. Why did He make it like this? Why didn't He make it I'd be happy? You know? Or if it's a bad thing to be a materialist, why did God make me that way? He could have made me a pure devotee. Why did He do it? It's all, and it's never our fault. So we see the karmis, they put the blame on God, and the jnanis, they put blame on God. Right? But the point is the Lord is there, His energies are there, but how we deal with His energies, that's the make it or break it point. Because dealing with Him, which everybody does, but the difference is how do you express your interaction with Him? Through the energy. Right? We're an energy, we have to deal with energy. Right? And so the energy that comes from Him is therefore then how we interact with Him. Does that make sense? So the Lord is there, then Lakshmi comes from Him. So everybody who's then following in devotional service are following Lakshmi. Does that make sense? The Lord's energy. So that's how it works. Now, if we're looking at His energy as something that we can enjoy, that's the material consciousness, because we're seeing the energy not in connection with the Supreme. Or if we see it in connection with the Supreme only as much as it's our benefit, you know, like the Abrahamic concept that God's made the world and given us the world for us to enjoy. Right? You want to enjoy? He's given you this. You know what I'm saying? The kid wants to play with his mom's jewelry, like that. So she gives some other kind of thing that they can play with. You know. So it's not that that's what you're supposed to be doing, but since you're doing that, then here it is. Does that make sense? So when we see it in context of Bhagavan, we don't take things out of proportion. And when we don't, we just see it as Paramatma or less, then we see is that, yes, He's given us this to enjoy, therefore it's our right to enjoy. In fact, if you're renounced, then that's wrong, because God gave this for enjoyment. Does that make sense? Yes. Yeah. See, it's a new advertisement. I'm saying. They call it Mimamsa Max.
Question on illusion. When you say about Maya, which is illusion, and then we have two definitions or two words, Yogamaya and Mahamaya. One functions in the material world, other functions in the spiritual world. Now, it is a requirement that illusion is anyway required either here or there. But one is positive and one is negative. Can you say that?
You can, but if we're taking in this conversation the element of illusion and then bringing out the good aspect of it, then it gives rise to the position that illusion as a philosophy is all right.
No, not in this context.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. In this context, you have to be careful. That's the difference between the preaching of Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya. Ramanujacharya had already preached, and those who were sincere had already come forward. But who were left, you couldn't leave the door open for any kind of oneness that Ramanuja was. You know, that oneness in purpose or in the mood or like that. So that brings out that personal aspect, relationship and all that. But because they were having a problem with that, because any relationship means illusion, and that if there's any oneness, then we're into the oneness, just, you know, without relationship. So therefore he comes along with two. Right? So you have to be careful where you bring this out. But when you're talking on another thing, yes, it is there. Otherwise, how is it going to work? Because you have the living entity who is, you know, not unlimited, and the unlimited, how will they interact? So it's only by the influence of Yoga Maya that this is going on. Otherwise, we see with Arjuna, as you remove that aspect of Yoga Maya, then he can't function in a relationship with Krishna. Like that. Like that. And we stop there, you know, in the modern context, they keep going until the person melts, right? You know, that's the standard. Yeah, so since we're talking about establishing a relationship, we don't want them to melt. So we don't go that far.
Like, always you say, prasadam has to be analyzed to that extent only where you can appreciate. Prasadam, the cooking or everything has to be analyzed to that extent only where we can appreciate.
Yes, yes, yeah. Because otherwise there's techniques and that the cooking yes okay.
Now you understand,
because you're thinking you should speak louder. Okay. That the you're seeing, let's say, in techniques of cooking, you're seeing it in the context of the presentation, the taste, the offering to Krishna, the Vaishnavas. So that's the context. You're not seeing it beyond that. You know? Because it's like, okay, chaunce being technically is you take some ghee and you put some spices in it and then you cook it. Now, you could cook it for 20 minutes. You could. I mean, technically, couldn't you? Yes or no? Is it it's not mechanically possible to cook the cumin seeds for 20 minutes in the ghee?
It is possible, but no recipe recommends that.
That's his point. Is you see it in the context of how you're using it. Right? So that's the whole deal. Is that what effect you want to get? Now, if I want, it's just like, you know, punch form? Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. So panchamar is a mix of five spices, right? You have meti, fenugreek, anise, cumin, black cumin, and rondini, which I think they say is celery seed, right? So now, depending on what you want to what effect you want. So in North Indians, when they use this spice, they look at the cumin because that's their main spice. Right? So when you put it in there, you get the cumin to the proper color that you want. But in doing that, the fenugreek goes more cooked, so it goes a little bitter. But in North India, they don't mind making the spices bitter. Like dry spices, they throw them straight into the ghee. Mm-hmm. And that actually burns them. It makes them a slight bit bitter. Like that. So for them, making the spices bitter is standard. But in Bengali cooking, no, they try to keep the spices sweet. You want something bitter, you bring in Corella or something. So therefore, when they cook the panchfuram, they look at the fenugreek. And as soon as the fenugreek just turns, that slight touch, that turn, it's done. But now you'll say, is the cumin and the other things are undercooked. Yes, they're undercooked means they'll be sweeter. So in other words, panchfuram in Bengali cooking is considered a sweet spice. But in North Indian cooking, it's considered a bitter spice. It just depends upon what you're trying to do with it. So depending on the context, that's how you look at it. So that's the point here, is that if we look at this about the element of illusion, and that in the spiritual world is illusion, then the problem is then we make it sound like illusion's okay in this context. But if we're talking about the love for Krishna and all that, it says, so it's about that affection for Krishna. So we see as that becomes the prominent, then his position, in other words, the majesty becomes less. So in other words, the greater the sweetness, the greater the yoga maya. And the less the yoga maya, then the majesty can manifest. So that's a different thing. When we're discussing rasa, then this comes out. When we're discussing tattva, we don't bring this out. Like that. Otherwise, people will misconstrue, because they have taste or rasa in the material, and then it's just, oh, I can be in the material, I'm okay. Like that. Yes. Okay. Non-devotees factually appreciate the wonderful creation of material nature, but they cannot appreciate the intelligence and energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is behind this material creation, right? So the jnanis, they're not appreciating the material creation at all. They may appreciate God, but in their limited form, because if they don't appreciate his energies and the functioning of the energies, then how much of the Lord can they appreciate? Right? But the karmis, they appreciate the creation, but they don't appreciate that this energy, the intelligence, and these energies come from the Lord. Right? That you have laws of nature, that's because of God's intelligence. Right? And that means it's his energy. And so that the energy of the material nature is so wonderful is coming from him, and those laws governing it are coming from him. So if that's theirs, we have those who appreciate the nature. Right? So then generally considered more on the platform of the mind and sentimental. And those who appreciate the laws, that's more the scientific. But the point is they both come there. So you see is here, by the karmis and the jnanis, they may appreciate the material energy, but they don't know the source of that. Right? So even the source of their jnan and attachments, then that's, they don't understand that that's coming from the Supreme. Right? Shripad Ramanujacharya, however, refers to a sutra, right? See, here's the point why we always put that something on the front. So Prabhupada said Shripad Ramanujacharya. He didn't just say Ramanujacharya, so here he said Shripad. So that's why when we're referring to our acharyas, we always use that. Yes. However, Shripad Ramanujacharya, however, refers to a sutra from the Aitareya Upanishad 111. Atmava idam agra asit, which points out that the supreme Atma, the absolute truth, existed before the creation. One may argue, if the Supreme Personality of Godhead is completely spiritual, how is it possible for him to be the origin of creation and have within himself both material and spiritual energies? Right? So now we're getting down, this is addressing the fault that they are seeing, that these schools are seeing. To answer this challenge, Shripad Ramanujacharya quotes a mantra from the Taittiriya Upanishad 3.1 that states, Yato va imani bhutani jayante, yena jatani jivanti, yat payant yabisham vishanti. This mantra confirms that the entire cosmic manifestation emanates from the absolute truth, rests upon the absolute truth, and after annihilation again re-enters the body of the absolute truth. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. The living entity is originally spiritual, and when he enters the spiritual world or the body of the Supreme Lord, he still retains his identity as an individual soul, because that's his nature. In this connection, Shripad Ramanujacharya gives the example that when a green bird enters a green tree, it does not become one with the tree. It retains its identity as a bird, although it appears to merge with the greenness of the tree. In other words, the greenness may be the same, right? But the point is it's still a bird in a tree. So there's a tree and a bird. But they just take the greenness aspect and get rid of the other. That's what we mean, is they only take which part of the Vedic version agrees with them, and the part that doesn't, they reject. So that's why if you just stick to these points of Pramana and Pramaya, and then use the techniques of logic, then it's very difficult to be, it's very easy to present and discuss and then analyze what people are doing, because they want to take it out of that context. They want it to go whatever their mind goes to speculate. You know, even they have a philosophy, as they go, they can make it up as they go. Mm-hmm. How does this match your definition? Mm-hmm. Right? How is this supported by Shastra? Mm-hmm. Right? So that's what you're doing.
Yeah. Do we say that, for example, here, those are the Mayavadis, they want to establish their point. But if we see devotees, for example, it's more weakness on the karma side, and they don't want to establish the point, usually.
Yes, but that's why they speculate and keep going. They keep changing the topic as you close in on that aspect that is being discussed, how it should be connected to Krishna, not used for sense gratification. Then by words they'll connect it through, or by the mood, or whichever. They'll use either the intelligence or the mind, whichever. So if you have a mood, then they'll switch with the mood. You know, if that's to advantage, and if it's a word, then they'll switch with that. But in any case, the transformation will be there.
So it's chala.
Huh? It's chala. It's a variety of chala. Though they don't know what they're doing, but they just do it like that. It would be. Yeah. Yeah. It's like you have Brahma Parinamabad, Shakti Parinamabad, and here this would be Vivarta Parinamabad. The transformation of the illusions. Right. To give another example, an animal that enters a forest keeps its individuality, although apparently the beast merges with the forest. Right? You know, it's like the end of the movie, they merge into the sunset. You know, they ride off into the sunset until you can't see them anymore, and then. So that's why it's a good ending, because it all becomes one. They went towards the light, you know, like that. Yeah. Then as people are less intelligent, then they don't use that one anymore. So does that mean the cowboys were more intelligent than a modern man? Similarly, in the material existence, both the material energy and the living entities of the marginal potency maintain their individuality. So the living entity is an individual and the external energy is an individual. They don't merge. Thus, although the energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead interact within the cosmic manifestation, each keeps its separate individual existence. Merging with the material or spiritual energies, therefore, does not involve loss of individuality.
When we saw Prabhupada's chapter, you know, we came to know about how, you know, the Cupid, he merged into Prabhupada.
Right.
Yeah.
Because where does Cupid come from?
Yeah, he comes from Prajumna.
Yeah, so that aspect of within Prajumna, that is Cupid, then Cupid merged into that.
Then how do we address the individuality of,
like, how do we address the individuality? Because the point is that that's a potency, a principle of Prajumna. And so then there's a manifestation. But whether that manifestation is there or not, that nature still remains. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You understand? There's that principle. That nature always remains. Then you have a jiva that is done there. So that jiva is there within Prajumna, because all living entities are within Prajumna. Like when he breathes back in, they all go back into him.
Yes.
Right? So, therefore, then.
No, into Sankarshan.
So, I knew.
I just sunk.
Didn't you see it coming? Yeah. This exactly proves what we were talking about before. Right? Because you simply take the external.
Yes.
Just where does Prajumna come from? From Karana Dakshai Vishnu. In other words, how does Prajumna get, unless that's there's the from Sankarshan comes Prajumna, from Prajumna comes Aniruddha. Does that make sense? So if we're going to use this subtlety here, we have to be able to use it all the way, not just where we like it. But for clarity, I could have been more specific there, but I left it just to see what would happen. Yes, yes, like that. So it's like each lamp comes out, but it has the same nature. So it has all that. So when we say Vishnu, it can mean, because Prajumna has all the aspects, it's just Vishnu's manifesting that mood of Prajumna. That's why he's called Prajumna. Just like he's acting as Mother Jashoda's son, so therefore he has that name, Jashodananda. Like that. But it's, so all these are there, so that's why you mentioned. So Prajumna means is Vishnu who has that flavor of Prajumna. Like that. So in the example, it's unfair to expect to be able to put all that together, but it was fun. So then that jiva being there and being able to function in that capacity at that time is not a problem. Because Prajumna is doing, and that jiva, so it'll work out. It's not a problem. How the Lord does it, that we don't need to get into.
But now, if you don't accept the supreme position of Krishna, you have a tendency to arrange according to our goal.
Yes. Yes. According to the external.
External, yes. And there is only two choices, according to Krishna or according to...
To us, to not Krishna, yes. But even that is still, it's all according to Krishna. It's just whether it's favorable in a personal relationship or unfavorable in that it's not a personal relationship. But still, for it to function, it still has to be favorable within the context that you're using it. So if you're using it within the context of the Brahman aspect, it has to be favorable in that, how the energies work, in the mechanics of it. We're looking at favorable and Paramatma, it has to be according to the laws of what is supposed to be done and not done. Because let's say someone is going to do something that's not correct according to Paramatma. Let's say like stealing. Stealing is never authorized. But according to the mechanics on the Brahman platform, then if you want to steal, what do you have to do? To follow the laws, what has to be done? You know, it has to be done in such a way that people don't know. You know, or in any way, even if they know, you can get away with it. So there has to be a good enough distance between you and them that it, you know. So, in other words, there's laws that have to be followed, mechanics. So even you follow the Brahman and he's successful at stealing, it doesn't mean on the Paramatma level it's correct. That's why in the future, then he will, you know, people will steal from him or whatever it is, he'll lose. Or he didn't get caught for stealing, then in another life, he won't have stolen and he'll be blamed for stealing. Right, so in other words, he will get the reaction. So like that. But then the whole point is then all this, either these two levels, how is that favorable to Krishna and pleasing to Krishna? So if it is pleasing to Krishna, then it's not a problem, like Krishna and the coward boy stealing butter. But if it's not favorable to Krishna, you know, like you going into the deity room and stealing, you know, butter, like that, then it's not working. So ultimately it goes back to the person. So it's the person's choice on what's favorable and what's not. Then that comes down as the laws that we see with Paramatma, and that's the mechanics that are there with Brahman. Does that make sense? Because I have unlimited knowledge and let's say not, but whatever. I have knowledge, a broad range of knowledge and skills. But in a particular situation, what knowledge and what skill do I use? You understand? So that knowledge and skill, that's jnana shakti. But its application of what will be used, that's the kriya. And then why am I doing that? It's to please Krishna, it's the icha. So that means the icha is the first. That's defining what's, you know, so what pleases Krishna means there's a particular result and experience. Now, if we work back, then what produces that? That's the kriya. The particular action produces a particular result and experience. Right? Does that make sense? And so then to do that, I have to have, you go back from that one step, I have to have the knowledge and skill and the position to be able to do that. Does that make sense? So that's why if we go into the second one, let's say I have the knowledge and skill, but not the position. But then I go to the kriya, and there's no one there to do it. I'm the only one there to do it. So therefore, the knowledge and skills there, I can apply it to get that result for Krishna. And as long as there's no one there to do it, I may be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as there's someone there who would do it, why would you do it?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? You just happen to be walking by. You know, you're doing some other work in the temple and all that, and something has to be done. You know, with the deities or something or that. And so then you may go in there and do that. You go in, you know, like the lamp fell over or something. You go in there and fix the lamp so nothing starts on fire. But it's not that. So I had the knowledge and skill, but technically I don't have the adhikar at that point, right? So now the question comes is, now I can't say by using the modern American logic that, well, hey, I did it there, so I went in, and so that can go in any time. So what's the whole point of this whole, you know, adhikar thing? No, it was for that specific thing, because it does include all that. Because it's an emergency, then yes, things will be done. But when it's not an emergency, the standard, why wouldn't it work according? Because people being clean, wearing the proper clothes and all that, you know, going in there in your overalls that you've been outside cleaning the barn, that's not exactly what you go into the deity room with. Right? But it has to be done, so it's done. Right? So that's what you do. But it's not that now it negates the adhikar, because the point is ultimately is Krishna's pleasure. Not just rules and breaking rules, and it makes me the authority and I can do whatever I want. So the whole point is you have the jnana kriya and that. So that's the Brahman Paramatma and the Bhagavan platform. Because that's there, that's why these are there. That's why everything functions in that way. Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah. The jnana shakti is what will give rise to that platform. Because then you have sat, you know, that will be the jnana, the existence of something. The kriya, that will be the chit, that's the knowledge, the application, and all that. Right? So here when we say knowledge, it means the application of it. Right? Because that's why that knowledge can go back and forth between the sambandha and the abhideya. Because you have to have the knowledge in Samanda, but at the same time as then you have to have it here. And then we even see it's more is that you have the knowledge, which is Sankarshan.
Yeah.
Right? But the connection of that knowledge with the senses and that mechanics of that, that's Prajumna. Right? And now if you're just talking about applying it, that you're doing all this for Krishna's pleasure, Vasudeva's pleasure, then Prajumna is in the Abhideya position. Because that's the application of it. But if not, if you're taking Vasudeva as performing the activity with that, then he moves back into the Sambandha aspect. Does that make sense? But ultimately, that knowledge came from Sankarshan. That's why from Sankarshan you get Pajumna. And from having that knowledge and the attitude and skills and applying that with the senses, then you get Aniruddha the result. And all that's to please Vasudeva, though Vasudeva himself maybe is the one who performs the pastime. But that's for his pleasure. So that's why you have these things, is that all these different positions can move around depending upon which aspect you're making prominent. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of where you put something, everything else adjusts. Is that...
But we can understand clearly if the intent is the same.
Yes. Yes.
If the intent changes...
Yes. That's a good explanation. Because if we have a particular misunderstanding of that, then we see it in a different light. Therefore, then we can't understand the application. Otherwise, then you see it all as one formula, but it can give varieties of taste. You know, it has so many aspects. Because that's the point of these Vedic formulas, is that this one formula that's so simple has unlimited sophistication in its application. That's what's confusing, because we're used to simple meaning it's not very developed, or it's very complicated. You know, it's sophisticated, but it's complicated. The Vedic, it's simple and sophisticated at the same time. That's the we're not used to that.
It takes time to understand the different angles in that commitment.
Yes. That's why then this whole, that's what Prabhupada gave this whole course, is that, you know, the Vedic standard of doing is 12 years. You know, I don't think it's, Prabhupada didn't say specifically the course should be 12 years long. The sense of the Vedic version is 12 is the general standard. then we're doing like that. And so then you see it takes time. Like now we're starting to catch this in the, what is this, in the eighth year, right? But these points Prabhupada's been making all along, right? This is quoting from, what did we say?
CC,
but it's purport. Yeah, to Chaitanya Charitamrita. But other places he's in Bhagavatam and he's quoting Vedanta Sutras coming in here. So, you know, six canto, different cantos. So the point is that these points of philosophy have been there all along. It's just as we go, we start to see more and more depth that's there. It's not that there's an increase in the quantity of points. It's just that we're seeing more depth in the points, more application, more connections.
Because
you do not
have...
Sorry?
It's a good sign.
Yes, it's a good sign. It's a very good sign. Like that.
Because
you
do not have...
We had two breakthroughs today, right? We saw this and we also learned about volume, right?
We do not have one specific book as such, you know, which defines all the different facets of it. You know, but then
we don't have any one book. We would say the Gita is the book.
Mm-hmm.
All the philosophical points in Gita. Those are expanded in the other literatures.
Mm-hmm.
But the same point is what's being given there, then the... we would say is that knowledge, that's Vedanta. In other words, the knowledge is Vedanta. That's that one body of knowledge, right? And that's the Paravidya. All the other branches of Vedic knowledge are apara, supporting that, you know? So even for us, these other six schools are actually Aparavidya. You know, only Vedanta is Paravidya. But as a general thing, you take Paravidya, meaning the philosophy. So they're in that category, but technically they're still Aparavidya. So then, that's based on the Upanishads. So the one form of Vedanta is the Upanishads. Another is Vedanta Sutra. The third form is Bhagavad Gita. So this Vedanta philosophy has these three forms. Not that it doesn't have more, but it's just that these are the basis. And then that full exposition on the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, that's given in Bhagavatam. And then the finer understanding, the Gaudiya understanding, bringing that to the forefront is there specifically as Chaitanya Charitamrita. So we say it's one body of knowledge.
And can we say that the sutras and Vedanta Sutra are an extraction from the Upanishads?
Yes, that's exactly it. The Vedanta Sutra is extracting from the Upanishad, just like Gita is extracting from the Upanishad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Janitai Gaurav.